D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you as we were all getting comfortable in the studio. We were all talking about, how late did you stay up to watch the hockey game last night? Ian Safar said, I was so tired, I tapped out after regulation. I fell asleep at the beginning of overtime, but woke up roughly in the middle. Derek, you said you made it to about where?
No, I watched it until the end. But I when they went into overtime, like the intermission, I turned the channel. And for about 20, 25 minutes, I turned it back on. They hadn't even started the overtime yet. So I got a chance to watch it all up until, you know, the last goal, which was, you know, textbook goal, you know, by Edmonton. So it was a good game to see. And again, if you're just a casual hockey fan, you need to start watching these playoff games because this series will go seven, I believe.
Willie, did you make it through the whole game?
I did. And also, I will even do you one more. I stayed up and watched, not the whole thing, but I watched the Mets against the Dodgers, which was still had a couple
had
innings left after it was over. I had spare. But that was one heck of a game. My goodness, what a great game. Florida, just for maybe some casual viewers, Florida does not lose games where they take a two-goal lead. They just don't. And they did last night because the Oilers were that determined. I thought that was
But it was a mistake at the end, I think, what really cost them in overtime.
Yes, a delay of game penalty.
Yeah, that cost them.
So as Willie mentioned, this stat, by the way, the Oilers win 4-3 in overtime on a goal, McDavid to Draisaitl. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. This stat was going around, I want to say, in the second intermission of the game last night, and I'm not usually a jinx-type person, but I saw it, and I was like, too many people are tweeting about this. Something's going to go wrong. The Panthers were 31-0 when holding a lead at the end of the first or second periods in Stanley Cup Final playoff games under Paul Maurice. That was the first time they have lost a playoff game in three seasons under Paul Maurice when holding a lead at the end of 20 minutes or at the end of 40 minutes. So that was a big deal. As Willie said, when the Panthers go up, they rarely, if ever, lose. Again, 31-0 before last night. But there was a little bit of a Nashville flavor in this as well. The two players who ignited the comeback for the Edmonton Oilers, Victor Arvidsson and Matthias Ekholm. They were down 3-1. Arvidsson scores right after Sam Bennett scores to make it 3-2. Ekholm ties the game at 3-3. Draisaitl wins it in overtime. And after Arvidsson scored, Willie, I went back into his career game log and looked at the Stanley Cup final from 2017. Arvidsson's previous Stanley Cup final goal for the Predators came 8 years ago today.
June 5th.
2017, and that made me feel real old. 8 years ago today, that was Arvidsson's first Stanley Cup final goal. He scored, Willie, what I would describe as a vintage Victor Arvidsson goal, that slap shot from outside. You don't see that much anymore from the forward position, but Arvidsson was always really good at that, especially off the rush coming down the wing. He scores. That was a huge goal because the Oilers had a breakdown. Sam Bennett, who is going to get paid this summer, scores to make it 3-1. You think, all right, that might be it. Arvidsson scores, I think, like a minute or so later to reignite the Oilers. But big goals last night from former Predators players Arvidsson and Ekholm.
And that is why, as I watch more, and also the Panthers kind of like being the villains, right? And we'll talk to Elliot about this as he's covering the series. Elliot Friedman will join us at 1. But the Panthers kind of like being the bad guy. They like being the ones that you hate to play against, and that's what makes them great. But not only for that reason, but for what you mentioned, I'm really rooting for Matthias Ekholm and Victor Arvidsson. Those guys are so classy. They won a lot of games when they were in their prime with the Predators. And obviously, Ekholm is still at the edge of his prime. He's really made a big difference for them. But Victor Arvidsson is the one I'm most happiest for because I think, Adam, it's fair to say that in the last three or four seasons, you know, he's really never recaptured his peak when he was with the Predators and he was inspiring the crowd with the Arvy hustle stuff. You know, he'll go into anywhere, and he's tiny, right? But he'll take a beating, and he gets everybody's attention because of just how hard he works. And guys like him are really elevating the Oilers right now. They're getting mileage out of guys that a lot of people thought were done, right? That they didn't have much left. Connor Brown and him and Evander Kane. These guys are really Vasily Podkolzin and Kasperi Kapanen, two first-round picks from years ago that really hadn't done anything in other places. They were kind of picked up off the scrap heap. Now they're starting to play well for the Oilers, and it's given them a shot in this series.
Well, Arvidsson, he dealt with some serious injuries near the end of his time with the Predators, and his offensive production dipped as a result. And even last season when he was with the Los Angeles Kings, he played 18 games. He was dealing with, I want to say, a back injury, but he was out of the lineup for most of last season for the Kings. And as you mentioned, Willie, we all know that Victor Arvidsson, he's not a big guy, but he would take a beating early in his career with the Predators. He would get into the dirty areas. He would get into the corners. He would take these huge hits. A lot of Predators fans remember the cross check from behind he took from Robert Bortuzzo when the Predators played the Blues, and that really turned things the wrong way in his career, at least with the Predators, at least.
Oh, yeah. He was never the same for the Predators after that.
Right.
And
so
since then, he's not been the same player. Is that fair to say?
I would say so. But, you know, he's still kicking. He's 32.
He's still kicking.
He's 32 years old. That's hard to believe. I remember covering Victor Arvidsson's NHL debut, and now he's 32 years old. And Matthias Ekholm, and we'll talk about this with Elliot as well, Matthias Ekholm, perennially underrated when he was a member of the Nashville Predators. Those of us who covered the Predators, who watched the Predators, we knew how important Matthias Ekholm was to the Predators. But now he's playing for the Edmonton Oilers. He's been in consecutive Stanley Cup finals. And even after missing a long time, he missed most of the end of the regular season, didn't make his playoff debut this year until the previous game, the last game of the Western Conference Final, because he had been dealing with injury. He is a vital part of that operation. Like when he's in there, that defense for the Oilers, it lines up just so, and he scores that big goal. I know Matthias Ekholm, Willie, he's lauded for his defensive ability, but we know that he has offensive game as well, and that was a big goal from Ekholm to tie the game in the third period.
I think just what he's done to get back healthy enough to play at this level with this much on the line says a lot about his grit. You know, you're right. He comes across this really nice, easygoing guy, classy guy. But underneath all that,
vicious.
Yes, he's very, very hard-nosed competitor. So he is a very special player that the Predators, I think going forward, one big thing for them, everybody is really hoping that what they got in return for him, which was quite a bit on the surface, right, pans out to be something that helps the Predators. Tanner Molendyke and Reed Schaefer really are two guys that they got for Matthias Ekholm. It remains to be seen what they're going to get. Both of those guys are still really, really young. But you hope when you give up an asset like Matthias Ekholm for all you're giving up that you get something really good in return.
Oilers win 4-3 in overtime. By the way, a former Predators player, at least one, is guaranteed to win the Stanley Cup because you have Matthias Ekholm and Victor Arvidsson on one side. You have Seth Jones playing for the Florida Panthers. So a former Predators player is guaranteed to win the Stanley Cup. I would venture to guess that most Predators fans, if they had to choose between the two, would choose Ekholm and Arvidsson versus Jones, just because Seth Jones wasn't here for too long, although he was a high draft pick for the Predators. But if you're pulling for the Edmonton Oilers, that also means you're pulling for Corey Perry. So just think about that, Predators fans. Can you imagine Matias Ekholm handing the Stanley Cup to Corey Perry? That might just make you feel a little bit nauseous just thinking about that. But if you want Ekholm and Arvidsson to win, that's the reality, folks. Corey Perry in the Stanley Cup final for the fifth time in the past 6 years has not won in that span. He was there with the Canadiens and the Stars and the Lightning and the Oilers. Has not won. But if Ekholm and Arvidsson win, so does Corey Perry. A bit of a catch-22 there, Willie Donick.
Corey Perry is still among the biggest villains in Predators history.
Absolutely.
He's in the top five. I would say Patrick Kane and Corey Perry, like the classic going all the way back, are right there. I'm trying to think of who else would be in there. Like Jimmy Vesey would, just for other reasons, is probably on that list. Ryan Suter for sure is on that list.
Did you say Ryan Kessler?
Ryan Kessler is a great one.
Yes,
that's probably
Ryan Kessler.
A great candidate for the
he
top
and Ryan
five.
Johansson butting heads all those years, but that goes way back as well. And Derek,
yes,
that power play goal at the end of the game, McDavid to Draisaitl. And by the way, Leon Draisaitl was being held together with duct tape in the Stanley Cup final last year. He was dealing with several injuries. A healthy Leon Draisaitl makes a gigantic difference in this series for the Edmonton Oilers. But I know the Florida Panthers, they're professionals. I know all of the other teams in the NHL, they're professionals. But if you are a penalty killer on another team and you have to stare down Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, I don't know how you're not wetting yourself.
You're talking
considering
about that.
Considering the stakes of this game and how dominant those two players are. I mean, if I am a Florida Panthers penalty killer, I'm going, oh geez.
That's the difference, because this team, you know, this team is so evenly matched. The difference is a mistake here, a penalty there, and that costs you the game. They have a penalty in overtime that basically cost them the game. You can't go on the. It's like going on the court with Michael and Pippen, Jordan or Pippen, and then say, okay, one of my guys got to come off. You think you're going to win? You think you have a shot? 4-on-5 with Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, and they got the five, and you just have four. You think you're going to win? That's what happened with Florida. You take a penalty.
A bad one.
A bad penalty, too. I don't know where he was. Was he trying? I think he was just trying to lift the puck up.
He was
up.
Trying to clear the zone.
Yeah.
But you can't shoot the puck out of your own zone and have it clear the rink without ricocheting off of something.
Yeah, and that.
So it was a delay of game penalty.
You can see it in his face, too.
He knew it.
I think he knew once he went to the penalty box, it was over. And then when they showed him coming out, he knew it. Yep, this is pretty much. He's going to put this one on himself. Because you can't do that when you're going up against a team that is basically your equal.
Paul Maurice had a good quote after the game. It was Tomáš Nosek who committed the penalty. And he was like, we're going to make sure that he doesn't eat alone tonight. We're going to make sure that he has lots of people sitting at his table and reminding him how good he's been for us. But yes, he's going to have to wear that one for a day. So game two of the Stanley Cup final is tomorrow night in Edmonton. Also tonight, starting tonight, the NBA Finals between the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Indiana Pacers.
Is anybody excited for that?
Well, it's the typical small market type
they
of argument.
They do have the MVP, meaning OKC. But.
Right, but I'm wondering, and this is maybe a conversation we can have more in depth at another point, Willie, but I'm wondering if it's finally time to bid farewell to this idea of the face of the NBA. Like, there are a lot of good players in the league. I know LeBron James was that player for a long time, and Kobe Bryant, and Michael Jordan. And you look at this, you look at these two teams. You have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, mm-hmm. who is the NBA MVP. You have Tyrese Halliburton, who has busted out in a big way, mm-hmm. especially being the arch villain of the New York Knicks. That raises your profile significantly. Mm-hmm. A lot of intriguing players in this matchup. But no, like last season, it was the Boston Celtics and the Dallas Mavericks. And then you had the Boston Celtics, which yes. is a marquee franchise. And on the other side, you had Luka Doncic, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have that in this NBA final. So I'm wondering if it's time perhaps to put the "we need a face of the NBA" to bed.
Yeah, Gilgeous Alexander is becoming a superstar, mm-hmm. right? He's the MVP of the league. And this is always gets me every year. For the last 20 years or so, everybody scoops the NBA MVP. It just comes out one day. Somebody's got the inside to the votes and decides to break it every year. I don't know why that happens, but he's a legit star, and this is maybe where he's going to become a guy that his name catches up with how well he's playing. Mm-hmm. And that's an incredible team. You see these commercials, and I honestly, when I don't even know the company that does it, but when they started using Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Chet Holcomb mm-hmm. and one of the Jalen Williamses, they have two, they've been using those guys in commercials the last 2 or 3 years. I honestly didn't know who it was. I knew Holmgren because he's so unique looking, right? Mm-hmm. There's never been a guy in the history of the game that looks or plays like him. So I recognize him. I didn't know how well Gilgeous Alexander was doing. Mm-hmm. So they kind of bet and they bought low on him, and his stock is rising up. But D-Mace, wouldn't you say that people really haven't appreciated his greatness yet? But if he wins this series, I think that's going to change.
Yeah, but it's sort of like, you know, Giannis or, you know, some of these other players that are in these smaller markets. You have to do something extraordinary for people, you know, globally to know about you. And it's the same, you know, here in the States. I think, you know, if you're not LeBron or if you're not Steph, then, or maybe a few other guys, then it's hard, or Jokic, it's hard for someone to identify you. Like you said, Shai Gilgeous, I remember him. The reason I remember him, one, is because he was at Kentucky. But he didn't stay at Kentucky long.
Not very long. Right.
Yeah, so you can't you tend to forget about it because he didn't stay there long. Usually we get a guy, you stay 2-3 years, and it's like, okay, I know this guy or girl. But now it's a year, you lose him, he get in the NBA, and he may not flourish for another 2 or 3 seasons. And that's what happened with Shai. And now he's considered one of the top players. Well, frankly, he's the top player this year because he won the MVP. So,
and it's been a minute since an American player has won NBA MVP, because Gilgeous Alexander is Canadian. Mm-hmm. Joel Embiid won the MVP recently. Is he Cameroonian?
Yes, he's from Cameroon.
Cameroonian, of course. Giannis Antetokounmpo is from Greece.
Jokic.
And Jokic is from Serbia, right? So it's been an international flavor.
It's been
the
since
MVP.
2017.
Was the last American mm-hmm. MVP?
Wow. Yep. Wow. I didn't realize it was that one.
That was Steph, wasn't it? Was
James
it
Harden.
Harden.
Wow, I didn't know that either. But then you look at these guys and you wonder, because you brought up face of the NBA. Mm-hmm. And you would automatically think that Giannis, he would be a face. Jokic, he would be a face. Shai Gilgeous, he could be the face. But I think the NBA, for whatever reason, they would rather have the face of the NBA as an American-born player, rather than, you know, a player that is great but from another country. I think they would rather, that's why it was LeBron, that's why it was Steph, that's why, you know, even Giannis, as good as he's been, nobody considers him the face of the NBA. They just don't. Jokic, the same way.
As good as he's,
yeah, 20. Jokic is the same way, but nobody considers those guys faces of the NBA. I think a lot of it has to do, they want to promote a American-born, you know, great player. And
but wouldn't you say too that commercial mm-hmm. with the three guys from the OKC that plays about as often? I'm tired of it. Right? Yeah. He's like, mix it up. Let's get some new.
What
new
a pro ones. Wants is that the one that was last year?
Well, that was the first one. Now there's the one where they all show up at the event and they're wearing the same
yes
20 outfits and uh-huh. they're like, wait a minute, that didn't you get.
Well, they got to show it now. They got to show it now.
Well, that's the thing, though. But that has been playing for every sporting event that I can think of. Baseball mm-hmm. games, hockey games, basketball games, obviously. It plays all the time. But I'll bet you there's a lot of people that are watching that don't know that that's the MVP of the NBA.
I'm sure. I am right? sure.
But this is the stage where I think it changes, where all of a sudden it's like, I don't know. SGA, is that what his slang nickname is? I still think that that's catching on. But once he gets to a point at a certain time, right, where it's just Steph. It's just LeBron. Obviously, LeBron was early. Steph was pretty early. But it takes a couple years for it to marinate, where you just become a one-letter guy, Madonna kind of thing.
But I guarantee you, Willie, and this goes to what I'm saying. I guarantee you, Willie, that more people know about the Ant-Man than they do SGA. And the Ant-Man hasn't even won the MVP. But
and Anthony Edwards has said that he doesn't want to be the face of the NBA,
but the NBA wants him to be the face.
But he doesn't want to be,
But he doesn't. He's Jordan-esque. He's an American-born player. They want him to be the face, but he's not ready for it. He doesn't want it.
615-737-1025. Your thoughts on the Stanley Cup Final, the NBA Finals, 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. George Plaster will join us coming up next for our weekly conversation. But actually, before we get to that, I have a text to read from my wife. She says, "We listened to you in the car, and Arlo said that Derek is bad and Willie is good and Daddy is bad." So, Willie, cheers to you, my friend. Derek is bad.
Welcome to the dad zone of nothing dad says can be good.
Derek, oh, wow, we bad.
It goes in and out of phases.
Derek is bad and Willie is good and Daddy is bad.
Why are you and I bad? What did we say?
Arlo, we're going to have a talk when we get home, bud. 615-737.
Very smart young man.
615-737-1025. Tune into 94.9 The Fan tonight as the Nashville Sounds take on Gwinnett at First Horizon Park. Pre-game begins at 6:20 and the first pitch is at 6:35. Coverage is also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. D-Mace, Fingen, and Donick, 1025, 1063 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Bingen joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by the one and only George Plaster. Hello, George. How are you?
Adam, I'm good. How you doing?
We are doing well. So we are all now a few days removed from Vanderbilt losing in the Nashville Regional with a whimper. No better person, in my opinion, I think, to put this into a historical perspective than you, George. So what do you make of what happened at Vanderbilt over the weekend and this stretch of four consecutive years, no Super Regionals for the Vanderbilt Commodores?
Well, I know that that's getting a lot of discussion. And let me say up front that, like Willie, I'm a huge Tim Corbin fan. And this is unfortunate because I think it's taking away from the fact that he has reached the finals of the NCAA baseball tournament on four different occasions. And last time I checked, football's never played for a national title. Basketball's never been to a Final Four or played for a national title. So in the long history thing, Corbin's been nothing but a miracle worker. Now, that said, this kind of stat comes up because they have achieved at such a high level over the years. And, you know, what we saw last weekend was a complete meltdown. They looked really tight. I don't pretend to know what's causing that because I'm not around internally to have any clue what causes it. I know that their plate discipline in the game Sunday was absolutely pathetic. The guy that they put out there on the mound for Wright State, you know, I don't know that I've seen on the college level a guy throw that much slop and get away with it for that long. It was really pretty shocking. I guess the one thing that maybe helps Vandy a little bit is the fact that some others bit the dust as well. The Texases and Georgia and some others. So they're not the lone Mohican, but still it looks bad.
George Plaster is with us, and Plaz, you know, just trying to get through the aftermath of this. What has been the reaction on your show? Because I think I'm sensing from you, like for me, I get shocked when people start taking it to a level with Tim Corbin of something along the lines of, hey, is the game passing him by? To me, that's the dumbest thing I've heard for a while. I've had conversations with you on your show about how, and we've had it here on our show a lot, about how you have to change with the times, you have to adapt. I think it's pretty easily it's easily seen that he's doing that. But doesn't it surprise you when you have a little dip like this, how many people overreact?
I've been shocked by it, Willie. Sunday around me, I heard a ton of criticism of him. And look, I'm not saying he's perfect. He made a couple of questionable moves in the series that, you know, I kind of scratched my head about. The pitching Connor Fennell in the Louisville game seemed to be sort of a I'm putting all my eggs in this basket kind of deal, and maybe you'd like to have a do-over. But again, I'm going to say it. This man's been to four different NCAA final rounds. In other words, there are two teams left, and his is one of them. Football's never sniffed that. Basketball's never sniffed that. Deep down, I don't think they ever will. And, you know, I think the criticism's got to be tempered a little bit by, wow, what this man has accomplished at this school is nothing short of miracle worker status. Now, you and I both know him better than probably most of the media. I think he puts an unbelievable amount of pressure on himself. I think he marches to the beat of a really high standard. And, you know, I don't doubt that at times his players feel some of that.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, that nobody hates losing more than Tim Corbin. And you've seen him, and I've seen him, in the aftermath of those. He's got to sort of go to his corner, right, for a while and, you know, sort of decompress. And it takes him a little while before he comes back swinging. But, and George, I think you can talk about years ago. We learned this pretty early about him. And it's what really makes him great, right? It's what separates him from a lot of people, his dedication to the whole thing.
Oh, my goodness. The sort of the concept of leave no stone unturned. I mean, that's Corbin in a nutshell.
Yeah. Can tell the story. After that Michigan loss, right, in 2007, and they've won two national titles. Like you said, they've been to four. They're two wins away from four national titles. But as you said, they've been to the finals four times. And this has all happened since the story that you're about to tell. But remember, you went to go see him just to say, hey, we've really enjoyed the ride. You know, this is a program that hadn't done anything close to this, and I know you're disappointed. You kind of wanted to just kind of say, we appreciate what you're doing. And you saw him. He wasn't really responsive that day, was he?
No.
This was
2007,
the David Price
team.
I
remember it well. I don't know that I'd ever seen anybody take a loss. And it was a shocking loss the night before because David Price had given up a ninth-inning homer and Michigan won the deciding game 4-3. But, Willie, you and I had gotten to know him, and you'll remember there was a day where I said to you before we really got to know him, there's something different about this guy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, earlier that spring, he had come to me, and we had gotten to talking about the possibility of hosting a regional, which Vanderbilt, I don't know that they had ever hosted one before. And he was worried about ticket sales and that kind of thing. And I told him that I would do whatever I could to help show-wise to push that. And, you know, he's always remembered that. Well, after that loss, I went to see him the next day, and it was, on my end, just sort of a, hey, keep your head up. This thing's headed in the right direction. Don't get down in the dumps, because while last night sucked, you know, this thing's headed in an upward trajectory. And, you know, at that moment, he didn't want any part of it. And he takes losses probably harder than any coach I have ever seen.
All right, George, let's have a little fun here. This will be under the category of this is not your first rodeo. This is a line you like to use. True?
Yeah.
So you can remember the early days of, and I would really say, honestly, that you were a pioneer in sort of introducing and letting the market of Nashville know the NFL is a big thing, even though it may not seem like it. There's that whole nebulous, hey, they're in Memphis. Hey, or first it was like, hey, are they really coming from Houston? Yes, they're coming from Houston. Oh, well, they're playing in Memphis. Well, now they're playing at Vanderbilt. It just didn't seem very big time for a while, but you were always at the forefront of covering the team. So you remember these days, the first few years especially, but even the first 6 or 8 years, getting the whole concept of OTAs and all these practices and workouts in the offseason where you would hear all these hyped up guys that Jeff Fisher would say, boy, we really like this guy. He's going to be really good. Or the media would latch on to a guy who was making all these plays. And we kind of had to learn to sift through the hype. And it's amazing how it still happens today because of now it's just such a rabid following. Everybody wants Titans news every day if they can get it. But you were kind of on the uphill climb. So you remember some of these days where we started hearing about these guys.
So the one that I used to make the most fun of, and Derek will get a good laugh over this, I used to say that there were three things in life that were certainties: death, taxes, and David Fluellen will lead the Titans in rushing in August. Every time you turned around, it was David Fluellen this and David Fluellen that. And when the regular season would start, you never saw a hide nor hair of him. Here are a couple of receivers that you need to make note of. Bashir Yamini.
was that with you, D Mace? Was he with you?
I think he was.
Bashir Yamini.
He was after. He was after me. No, he was after me. Mm-mm.
And don't forget the great Isaiah Mustafa.
Yeah, I see him. I remember a receiver. Yes. You know, he does movies now.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, he does movies.
Something now.
Yes. Yes, he does movies now.
Have I seen
so
him in anything?
So he's making more money than all of us.
Yeah, he plays in Tyler Perry movies.
Oh.
He's the guy on the commercials, the Old Spice commercials.
Really?
That's yes. Isaiah Mustafa?
Yes. Uh-huh.
That cannot be the same guy. There's no way that guy was in the Titans uniform.
Really? Yeah, the receiver, yeah.
Okay, we've got to research
that's
this.
Good.
Because that's a lot of commercials.
He absolutely was.
Yeah, it's the same guy.
He was an off-season indoor practice squad member for the Tennessee Oilers in 1997 and 1998.
The first time I saw him on screen, I said, I know that dude. And it turned out to be, I sent him a quick text, and it turned out to be Isaiah.
Yeah, he's definitely doing better than all of us, George. He is absolutely doing
better than all of us.
He smells better than all of us, and his bank account is fatter than all of ours.
I like his latest one. Hollywood ripping us.
Exactly.
Oh, no question. The latest one is one of my favorites. He's got that interaction with the woman that they're always arguing over who's Old Spice is it?
Mm-hmm.
And he's on the exercise bike. You always hear about this antiperspirant. It's not deodorant. It's just antiperspirant. He goes, I smell like perspirant.
So that's him?
That's him.
Indeed.
That's Isaiah Mustafa.
Isaiah Mustafa.
I didn't know that.
Oh my God!
just look the name up, George. Just look the name up.
We all learned.
He's
something
played in movies.
Today.
He's the Old Spice. He had the Old Spice commercials. So
wow, we learned something today.
And other commercials too.
I'm on the throwback to Hale Stadium. You know, just getting we're all standing there on the sideline, learning all these guys. Right? You're like, this is the NFL, and of course, it was still such a work in progress. But you get a feel for how to cover a camp. Like nobody, none of us here that were, had been here knew how to cover a camp. And so we sort of learned on the fly. And so we, you had to learn everybody in the roster. And one of them was Isaiah.
According to Wikipedia, the Oilers signed him to the practice squad, then sent him to NFL Europe's Barcelona Dragons
in
1998.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget the backup quarterback, James Ritchie.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. Ah. He didn't last very long.
How about George McCullough?
Oh, my goodness. I hadn't thought of that one in a while.
Or Danon Sidney.
Danon Sidney, compared to this group, is a rock star.
Oh, absolutely.
He had some good moments, Danon Sidney.
Who was the tight end who was a special teams guy right at the beginning from A&M, Willie?
You talk about Rod. Rod, he was, no, Rod wasn't from A&M.
Oh, I know you're talking. Yeah, it was Rod. Wasn't it
Rod Lewis?
Rod Lewis.
No. It wasn't Rod Lewis. From A&M, back when we first got here?
Yeah.
It had to be Rod Lewis.
Rod Lewis played for Tennessee in 1997.
That's not the one.
Well, we got
it. It was a white guy who was a tight end, but really was more a special teams guy.
Not Mike Rohn.
Not Rohner.
No, Rohner.
Rohner has a unique history as well. Rohner, he wasn't ever hyped up.
No, but he was Frank's running buddy.
Yes.
And when we decided that there was going to be a Frank Wycheck show, Frank sort of tossed out this thing that there would be a segment called Rohn's Rumors. And I'll never forget the day he said that. I don't know where we were, but Rohner turned to me and he goes, "If Frank thinks I'm coming out there every week for a sandwich, he's got another thing coming."
Right. There wasn't a plan in the budget to pay Mike to be the sidekick on the show.
There was no budget.
There was no budget.
No, none.
George, always a pleasure. We will pick up this conversation on the other side, but we're glad that you helped us kick it off.
Bashir Yamini says hello.
We say hello back. Thank you, George.
See you. Bye-bye.
All right, so we teased it there. I will introduce the segment coming up next because, as Willie mentioned, it's the middle of the summer. We have little football to discuss in terms of what's actually happening at OTAs. So we are going to introduce the Tennessee Titans offseason all-stars. And when I say all-stars, I'm using finger quotes. And I'll explain that coming up next. We want your participation as well. 615-737-1025. Derek Mason, Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game. Don't miss out on Nashville's best deals. Great offers for 312 Pizza, Beach Bend Amusement Park and Splash Lagoon Water Park, Central Barbecue, Fog Street Lawn Club, and more. Get them now while supplies last at thegamenashville.com/deals. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. A couple of texts from Eric. It says, "Hey, Willie, Dion Cole is the Old Spice guy arguing with his wife in the current commercials. Isaiah did the earlier commercials." So
Isaiah's on a horse.
Multiple.
Oh, Isaiah Mustafa is on the horse. Yes. Okay, different guy. All right, so there's two guys. All right.
And then Adam in Portland says, "James McKeehan was that spectacular tight end you guys were thinking of. The tight end that George was trying to remember his name."
Okay.
So we were
having fun with kind of some just obscure guys. I mean, he was going very obscure.
Yes.
Right? But we're going to try to streamline this target to a little bit of a slightly different category.
Yes.
Right?
So
of guys who are the heroes of the offseason that are built up and get talked about on shows like ours, shows like George and I did for all those years, going all the way back to the first season. But you kind of learn over time that these guys don't always pan out.
Absolutely. So I'm referring to them as the Titans offseason, in quotes, all-stars. Players who were hyped up in the offseason who amounted to absolutely nothing when it mattered for the Tennessee Titans. Because, look, it's the middle of June, or actually it's the beginning of June, but OTAs are here. Mandatory minicamp is next week. Then we have that long 6-7 week stretch until training camp starts. And we are guilty of it on this station, on this show. Did you hear what Calvin Ridley said about Cam Ward? Did you hear what Brian Callahan said about Cam Ward? Did you hear what Cam Ward said about Cam Ward? And it's usually the same trite stuff you hear every year. I'm in the best shape of my life. Derek Mason, how many times in interviews every summer did you say that you were in the best shape of your life?
I guess whenever somebody asks that question,
you never say. You never said, man, I really let myself go this summer. I don't know how good I'm going to be for this team. So this is what I want all of you to do. At 615-737-1025, our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I want you to share with us the players who were hyped up in the offseason for the Tennessee Titans, who amounted to absolutely nothing, ultimately. Which players fooled you? I'll give you an example. I mentioned this yesterday. Chigakonkwo, after his rookie season, in a limited role, he was efficient, and I bought into the hype. Now, he's still on the team, and I do think that a lot of the players that we're going to discuss barely hung on with the team, let alone hung on in the NFL. But I bought into the Chigakonkwo hype a couple of years ago, and that has not panned out. I will also share with you, Willie and Derek, who I believe this year's candidate is going to be. I can already tell who it's going to be. Xavier Restrepo. It's absolutely Xavier Restrepo, an undrafted free agent. The history with Cam Ward. Remember how excited Titans fans were when the Titans signed him after the draft. The hype is already off the charts for Xavier Restrepo. And I don't think there's a non-zero chance that he doesn't make the team.
Willie, I have – and you and I are both – I think you and I are both guilty of this one. And this may end up being a huge one. Dorio Green Beckham.
Oh my God.
Yes.
It's so amazing you just brought
DGB.
That up.
DGB. Yes.
5 minutes ago, I asked Mahoney during this break. Uh-huh. Mahoney, I'm doing the show from home today. Mahoney Donick, lifelong Titans fan, has grown up. It's in his blood. I asked him for two names, and that was one of them.
Man. He may go down as the all-time.
Oh, he might be the all-time. And D-Mace, you used to talk about him so much.
Oh, my goodness. I pumped his tires.
You pumped his tires. Like, he just got to lose a little weight. He's going to get there. And Dorial Green-Beckham at one point was the number one recruit in America.
Man.
At wide receiver at Missouri. All this talent. And then drafted maybe in the second round?
Second
maybe?
Round,
he
yeah.
was the 40th overall pick.
Yeah.
Second round in the 2015 draft. He played 16 games for the Titans, started 5 games, 32 catches, 549 yards, and 4 touchdowns.
Man.
He went to Philadelphia, right, in the trade for Dennis Kelly.
Yeah.
Played that year.
And I thought
year,
at the time, I was like, what the heck? Are they just Dennis Kelly? That ended up being a really good trade for John Robinson.
Yeah.
Played that year in Philadelphia, and that was it. He was out of the league after 2 seasons.
Yeah, I was so high on that kid, man. Gosh. Never did work out.
But
man.
Dorial Green-Beckham is the perfect example of someone in the offseason were like, oh, my God, did you see Dorial Green-Beckham in 7-on-7s? That guy's going to be a star. And you saw what happened. So 615-737-1025. Which player fooled you? Which player hyped up in the offseason by the Tennessee Titans, by, frankly, those of us sitting in these chairs. Which player fooled you? Which player who was hyped up in the offseason that amounted to absolutely nothing were you fooled by? And we all have our choices, and we are going to share them with you coming up next. 615-737-1025. Derek Mason, Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063. The game.